It's called birthright citizenship. The idea has long been considered to have its roots in the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, specifically Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, which is referred to as, right, the Citizenship Clause. Now, while the Citizenship Clause has long been seen by people and courts, including the U.S. Supreme Court, as the confirmation of why people can remain in America, Donald Trump, his administration, supporters, they want to greatly narrow the meaning of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, which Trump has tried to do via an executive order. This all, as you would expect, landed before the U.S. Supreme Court, which between now and the end of this month will release their ruling on this issue. My next guest is here to review the elements of this case and tell if any clues of what the court's ruling might be can be found in the questions that they wound up asking both sides during the hearings. He's Vice President for Legal Affairs with the Landmark Legal Foundation, Michael O'Neill. How are you today, Michael?
I'm great, Chris. Good to be with you.
Likewise to have you back here, too. Landmarklegal.org is the website. Let me establish a foundation for you listening. Reading from the 14th Amendment, Section 1, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof any are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. And to give you some numbers to talk about the magnitude and the importance that we're discussing here, there are 5.5 million U.S. children at last estimate who are living in households with at least one undocumented immigrant parent, and 9% of U.S. births annually are to households with at least one undocumented immigrant as a parent. So we're talking about something pretty heavy duty, depending on which way the court goes, Michael. When you look back at the hearings and both sides presenting their case, what stood out to you as maybe the best point on, but the best on point? And was there any either side trying to divert the justice's attention from law and trying to get them into opinion?
Sure. I think the arguments and the briefing all focus on that term, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. What does that mean? Does that mean that you have simple territorial presence, as you indicated, Chris, which would be earlier, that's the earlier interpretation, the historical interpretation here, that simple territorial presence of the birth mother is enough to convey automatic citizenship to the child, no matter, despite the legal status of that birth mother. If you're born in the territorial confines of the United States, that means you're a citizen, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. Others, the President Trump included, and others who looked back into the history and terminology and the debates surrounding the ratification of the 14th Amendment, presented evidence to expand that it meant something more than just mere territorial presence. There had to be, in other words, there had to be some sort of permanency or political allegiance to the United States of America. And it had to be beyond something that just simply being present here. You had to have some level of permanency. There's a Supreme Court case, Wong Kim Ark, that was the precedent for this, and that's kind of the basis, which was decided in the late 1800s, so well over 100 years ago. And that involved Chinese nationals who'd come to the United States and the court and gave birth, and the court concluded that the territorial presence was enough to convey citizenship. Wong Kim Ark is distinguishable, though, in the fact that these individuals were here in a permanent manner, and they were here legally. So they were, although they were not citizens of the United States, they were Chinese nationals, but they were here permanently, and they had established something beyond just mere temporary status in the United States. So I think there was some evidence to support the president's argument. The question, though, which really kind of sussed out during oral arguments, is that whether the executive order is the proper vehicle to accomplish this national, this national important policy. As you indicated before, you're talking about potentially millions of people going forward, a very serious issue that's facing our country. And the question really is one of process for the court. Can a president do this, effectuate this interpretation, and implement this policy via an executive order, or is something more required? In other words, would it have to be an act of Congress? And I think oftentimes that might be a hang-up for the court, for at least some of those swing justices that we often talk about, Amy Coney Barrett, Justice Kavanaugh, maybe Justice Roberts as well, is they're questioning about whether a president can effectuate this instrumental change and this fundamental change in the way our country interprets a critical constitutional provision via executive order, or does Congress need to step in here and act as the best body to present this sort of interpretation?
So the two sides are looking at respectively as either prioritizing where a person literally and figuratively stands, where the argument against for the 14th Amendment is where that person is standing and what they're standing on, soil versus location, I guess would be the layperson term.
Yeah, exactly. That came down to it. That's interpreting the Constitution, the constitutionality. And so we can kind of dissect this in a couple ways. We can look at what is the meaning of the constitutional phrase that we're talking about, the citizenship clause of the 14th Amendment. And we can discern and we can try to interpret this, and we can use canons of interpretation. We can use originalism. There's methodologies in place to try to discern what the meaning of the ratifiers were when they enacted this provision of the 14th Amendment. What was their meaning? Would they have intended it to mean children of illegal immigrants or birth tourism, for example? I don't think you could ever say that individual is a Chinese billionaire. I don't even know if they could get their head around that. A Chinese billionaire coming into the United States, having 100 surrogate children, and then having those children taken out of the country, but still they retain those American, that citizenship. I don't even know if they could wrap their head around that. But you try to discern that meaning. What you and I are talking about right now is constitutional analysis. There is a very distinct limit. Let me make an interesting point here. There is a very distinct chance that a controlling majority doesn't go down this road, that refrains from doing this. And let me explain why they would do this. There's something known as the doctrine of constitutional avoidance, canon of constitutional avoidance. And that means if the Supreme Court can withhold making an interpretation of a constitutional provision and still achieve an outcome that it would have achieved otherwise, it will go down that alternative path. Now, let me explain why this is an important thing to consider here. If the Supreme Court, if a controlling majority of the Supreme Court, for example, interprets the terminology of the 14th Amendment, that stands as the interpretation of the Constitution. And essentially what that does, say, for example, a majority of the justices, five of the justices, agree with those who are challenging President Trump's executive order, and that all you need is mere territorial presence to be a United States citizen. So if the court interprets the 14th Amendment in that way, that means it closes the door for any congressional action, and that's what I'm talking about before. So say, for example, Congress wanted to pass a law outlawing birth tourism, which I think 90% of Americans would agree with. That law would be, in effect, unconstitutional. So the court, I think, is leery of freezing out Congress. So my prediction is, and again, this is just a prediction, Chris, My prediction is that a majority of the justices, you have probably those three justices that I talked about before, would be in a position to say, hey, look, there's a law on the books that largely mirrors the language of the 14th Amendment. This was a law that was passed in the early 20th century and affirmed a few decades later. That largely mirrors the language of the 14th Amendment. Again, born or not, subject to the jurisdiction thereof. I could see a case where the court says Trump's executive order violates the law, and we're not going to get into the constitutional question. We're just going to simply say his executive order violates the law, and the executive order is illegal, and therefore we're going to throw it out. It preserves Congress's role in this place. It's not an optimal, from my perspective, it's not an optimal outcome because I happen to agree with the constitutional interpretation proffered by the Trump administration. However, it's the best of a bad outcome. In other words, Congress still has a role to play in this, and we don't have a final interpretation of the 14th Amendment.
But at the same time, doesn't the Trump administration and, hypothetically, if Congress decided to take some related action to the citizenship clause, there's literally a century of court rulings at all levels, up to and including the U.S. Supreme Court, which backs up what the people supporting the 14th Amendment, the citizenship clause, are saying. If you want to change something, alter something, add to the citizenship clause in any level of redefinition, you have a lot of court precedent you got to battle and overcome.
Yeah, but I think the best vehicle would be doing it via a statutory challenge rather than an executive action challenge. And that's what we're happening right now. Remember what we're dealing with. We're dealing with an executive order. And so the best vehicle to present the interpretation you want to proffer, and of course this is what we're talking about, the interpretation that you have to have more than mere territorial presence. The best vehicle to challenge that would be a law that, for example, outlawing birth tourism, right? And so you're saying, okay, well, I think Congress passes a law. Again, we're in a hypothetical situation here.
Yeah.
Congress passes a law, for example, as I said, says that you can't come to the United States for purposes of surrogacy and have a bunch of children and then take those children out, however the law works. That would be a law that on its face would be consistent. And you would have to reconcile that law with the 14th Amendment. And I think you'd have a very strong chance to proffer the argument again, to succeed on the argument that the Trump administration is making now, hey, that you have to have more than a territorial presence. Look at the way it's presented. It's an, almost what's really important when we're talking about these constitutional and Supreme Court cases is how is the issue presented to the court? It's almost as important as the facts underlying it. What is the issue strictly before the court here? And again, as I'm talking about before, I'm reiterating this point, this has been presented to the court in the form of an executive order, which again, the court is kind of leery, you know, recognizing the separation of powers and the importance of that doctrine, is a little leery of just by nature of a president accomplishing something with enormous national implications simply via an executive order. So you're operating under that, you know, that handicap right from the get-go if you're the Trump administration. And I kind of think that that's where they're going to go. The court's going to kind of say, look, executive order, we're a little leery of this, but we understand some practicalities here, so we want to preserve the Congress to do something. So we're going to hold off on getting into a constitutional analysis. We're just going to say on this on the law, and we're going to allow Congress the opportunity to pass laws that might affect birthright citizenship, and then we'll revisit the constitutionality question at a later time.
So basically, it's not what's being done, it's how it's being done is what the court's going to rule on.
You got it. You got it. That's absolutely right. So, yeah, and again, I think the best way, and again, I am supporting the Trump administration's position on this, and I understand the need for this executive action. But so often now we're seeing this is Congress's inability to act, and you're seeing then what you're seeing because Congress isn't doing anything. I mean, let's think about voter integrity, for example. They're not doing anything. And so what happens is there's a clear need for action, and the president is stepping into it. Well, Congress isn't doing anything to prevent birth tourism. They aren't doing anything to prevent this, you know, birthright citizenship. It's become an enormous national security problem for our country. Think about this from a national security perspective. Congress isn't doing their job, and so the president's going to have to step into that breach. But ideally, under our system of powers and our separation of powers, we want to have Congress stepping into it. That's how kind of the court looks at this. They don't deal with the politics of the issue. They kind of deal with it from a systems and a separation of powers perspective.
As I said back in the intro, this is one of the big rulings that they always like to save for the end to leave you in suspense or curiosity, whatever the case may be. So when it happens, believe me, you'll hear about it one way or the other. And to follow along with legal matters that do indeed matter, Landmark Legal Foundation is the go-to at landmarklegal.org. Here's their Vice President for Legal Affairs, Michael O'Neill. Thanks for helping us understand the importance of this, the path to whatever the ruling is going to be, the path that it's going to be taken. Thanks for being here today.
My pleasure, Chris. You have a great day.